Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ask Anabaptist Perspectives Anything podcast, the exclusive podcast for our Patreon patrons and those who support us through the Partners Program. So today is going to be a bit of a fun one. Now, normally we pull comments that we get on our main episodes, like you can find on YouTube and our website and things, which is great. We enjoy answering those questions. But we wanted to just note before we get started with this, there's going to be a link in the description of this episode for you all here that are partners of Anabaptist Perspectives to submit your questions or comments or things you would like to have us discuss. So if there's a topic you want to hear us dive into, or if you just have this question that you want us to tackle, send that over to us. We would love to dialogue on that and see where it goes. So we're looking forward to hearing from you. Love always hearing your feedback. We'd put out an audience survey as well. It's great to hear from some of you all. I think we'll put a link to that too while we're at it. Yeah, it'd be good to interact with you all a little bit more. So without further ado, we're going to jump into this. We're here in the studio in person this time down in Tennessee with Jaron Miller and Marlon Summers, both staff members of Anabaptist Perspectives. It's always good to record in person. So I'm going to read this comment from Kyle, who posted this on YouTube in response to Chester Weaver's episode we did. I'm going to say, it's been probably 2 years ago now. And that episode is called The Apostasy of the 1960s, about some of the changes within the Mennonite Church in that era, as well as some things on fundamentalism and so forth, which has sparked a whole slew of responses and other content that you're free to find over on our website. But we're going to stay a little more specific today because that's a whole big topic. So this is what Kyle says. I've been Amish Mennonite my entire life. The thing I struggle with the most is this. We are supposed to be imitators of Christ. The best example of imitating Christ is Jesus' disciples, Paul, and the early church. Why did the early church grow in the midst of persecution and turmoil? Because the church had something to offer. Why, then, has the last 60 years of the Anabaptist church been completely stagnant and or dying? Do we not have something to offer the world? So, what do you all think of Kyle's comment? What would you say to him?
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. I guess I have two prongs. I agree there's a stagnation of some sort that we see in the last 60 years, and I do want to discuss that. I have a few thoughts about that. But I really want to push back, I guess, when you say has been completely stagnant, looking across the conservative Anabaptist spectrum. I don't know what your experience has been in the places where you are, but I think we've seen a lot of places with life, whether it's the very quiet life of somebody, you know, fulfilling their responsibilities, ministering to others in a very, you know, low-key faithfulness. But also, yeah, expansion and growth. There's definitely people I think of, places I see, think of, where people have gone to the hard places with the gospel. People have worked hard at developing service opportunities, developing thinking, developing different pieces. I don't see completely stagnant as quite an honest assessment, even though I am sympathetic to what you're feeling. Reagan or Jaron, maybe you have comments.
Yeah, Jaron, I'd like to hear your input on this. What do you feel on this comment?
I guess I'm initially sympathetic because there's a piece of me that resonates with what he's saying. I have sometimes, and maybe actually often, thought that I have identified opportunities that are being missed, ways in which we have fallen into complacency, and other things that make me think, yeah, stagnation or decline is present within our circles, which is regrettable. However, that is overly simplistic and doesn't count for much of what's happening. So I care about mission work. One thing that's bothered me and seems like stagnation within our circles is that it's rather infrequent that we successfully are able to integrate people into our churches from backgrounds other than just traditional conservative Amish or Mennonite. And I think that's real. Something that needs to be acknowledged in addition to that is the huge mission movement within our circles proportionate to the size of our circles. So Reach is a good example. It's encouraging to me. I think for the past few years, roughly 2,000 people have been at that event. If you're looking at the specific swath of churches that are represented by the missions there, it's roughly 20,000 people in our churches. When you have 2,000 people there at the mission event, that's about 10% of the people within our circles that are either directly involved with these missions or interested in some other sort of a way. Some people there are completely uninterested. Their school makes them go. So it's not fair to judge vibrancy or commitment to missions totally based off that. But I do see that as one significant indicator of mission work and forward thinking. People with ideals, seeing possibilities of what can happen when people from our circles reach the world around us with the gospel. There's something to that. So I say that in addition to what I said first, and that I actually do sympathize a bit with what Kyle is saying here.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll be honest, my mind is boggling a little bit that that only represents a group of about 20,000 people.
That's hearsay. I didn't look at the statistic, just the math, but...
Right. That's of course, 20,000 people is not the size of the whole conservative Anabaptist community. That would be a particular slice that would be likely to have their mission organizations represented at that event.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Like, I guess if I were to respond to this, and man, I'd love to just sit down with Kyle and talk this through. So, Kyle, if you ever hear this, hit us up. That would be really interesting to explore more. But there's definitely some underlying assumptions going on here. Things like because the church had something to offer, and he's talking about the early church, and then why are we being stagnant? Don't we have something to offer the world? It's basically a push saying we don't really have something to offer, because if we did, it would be work. It's like we're missing something here is what it sounded like to me, and maybe that's a bit harsh of his harshness, but
can I reframe that, Reagan?
Could you please? Yes.
I mean, maybe the thing is there, what I hear Kyle asking is if we're in fact stagnant and not growing, what's going on? Is it because we don't have something to offer? Is all the rah-rah we put out about how Anabaptism is so great actually misleading if it's not translating into something more active?
Like, we're really missing something here, is what he's saying. And we're, something.
It feels like that, yes.
Yeah. Though I would still think the insinuation here is like, yeah, there's something a lot more that we should be offering that we're not. It seems like that. I don't know. And I have definitely heard that mentality from a lot of, more young people, but a lot of people in the Anabaptist world. Like, we're missing something here that the early church had because it worked for them. It's not working for us. Therefore, therefore that's why we're not growing or whatever, you know, that sentiment. Anyways, all that to say, he says the Anabaptist church has been, been completely stagnant. That's a very big demographic. Like, Anabaptist is a very broad slice. So I don't know if we can say that correctly. Like, there are Anabaptists all around the world. There's so much variety within the various groups. So I can see maybe a particular demographic within a subset of Anabaptists may be stagnant. But to say all of them and to say completely stagnant, I don't know. It's just such a broad category of people. That's really hard for me to say I agree with that. So, like, I'm sympathetic to what he's saying. But at the same time, there are a lot of groups within the Anabaptist world that have been doing some really amazing things and have been growing and have been doing missions. And there's been others that haven't. So, to me, it's like neither here nor there. There's some encouraging things, but then there's some other things that say, okay, we got a lot of work to do. So all that to say, Kyle, you're right, but I would also say in some ways there's some really bright spots too that would not be completely stagnant. And Jaren, you referred to this too, just the huge emphasis on missions within our demographic. And this is something we should get Harry Argo on this podcast sometime. But he talks about this quite a bit. Well, him and Dean Taylor were at a missions training that I was helping run this last year. And both of them, having come from a Protestant evangelical background, they said, you get this idea when you look at the evangelical world that they're doing all this missions and yay, it's so great and wonderful. And he's like, when you start peeling back the layers, because they were in that stuff too, they said, really, it's usually just a very, very small percentage of them are actually doing missions, but then they're out of proportionally lifted up as this shining example of missions. And he said, but then when you get to the Anabaptists, we don't really do it that way. We don't lift them up like heroes, but there's way more of us percentage-wise that are actually doing missions. Like way more young people, way more families in missions than you would have in at least the evangelical sector that they were coming from, which I found really interesting to hear that. And we started looking at numbers and how many Anabaptist missions there are. Again, I'm thinking of our own demographic when I say this, because that's what you had mentioned as far as like the Reach Conference say. It is a surprising high percentage. And that's really encouraging to me. And I think that's maybe more of a new thing. You know, maybe that wasn't the case 30, 40 years ago, but it is the case now. And that's hopeful. You know, that gives me courage for the future, I guess. So I don't even know what all I'm saying. I guess I'm trying to argue for more nuance. So what do you guys think, though? Am I close to the mark, or am I off the rails here a little bit?
I think that's very worth keeping in mind. It's easier to look at negatives than positives often, and just to bring those back is good. But yeah, I do see a point to what he describes as stagnation, and I think there's some lessons to be learned from it. So Kyle was responding to Chester Weaver's episode, which we titled The Apostasy of the 1960s. I wish we would have titled that something like The Parting of Ways in the 1960s or something like that. Because you know, quick sketch of the history going on there is, you know, it describes the beginnings of what historians call the Old Mennonite Church. So especially the Mennonite conferences in the eastern United States, the 60s and years following, you know, parting ways to where you have on the one hand the conservative Mennonites, and on the other hand groups that have gone more, it might be part of MCUSA now or something like that. And yeah, there's been a monumental kind of parting of directions in practice and in a lot of things. It just makes me think something I've heard my dad say many times about groups that split, whether it's at a conference level or just in an individual church. The people that split were usually the people that needed each other. And so in a parting of ways like that, there's going to be a heavy loss. And, you know, I don't have a theory of how all those issues should have been navigated and so on, but we need to acknowledge that, you know, that parting of ways was a loss for those of us in the conservative segment. There was something lost. And Kyle mentioned the Amish Mennonite. It's a slightly different church group, but there were similar dynamics in time period there. In the Amish Mennonite side. And one of those losses has been mission. I find it fascinating to read stuff from the first half of the 20th century about the Mennonite Church, both foreign missions, but also in America, those early years of the 20th century, first half roughly, saw a lot of Mennonites trying to do outreach beyond their traditional areas, beyond their, you know, their settled farming communities. And it went in both directions. One was, and especially you see this in Virginia, West Virginia, heading out of the farmland and into the into the hills, into more of the boondocks. And they often did it through Sunday schools, but their Sunday schools were like mission outposts and so on. But also from the traditional Mennonite farmlands into the cities. And you see this a lot, eastern, central Pennsylvania. You know, large numbers of Sunday schools and churches and so on started in those cities. And yeah, I always find it really encouraging to read those stories, the way they took that seriously, seriousness, earnestness that they took there. And yeah, there was definitely a loss in that as those groups parted ways and differences in ideology. Feels to me like in the conservative side, like, you know, that resulted in a setback to missions that has taken a while to overcome. Didn't eliminate them. They were always there throughout these circles.
But I would, yeah, just looking at a history of missions, it does look like there was a decline there in missions over that time. And it's almost like we're rebuilding from that. I don't know if that's an accurate assessment or not. I'm not a Mennonite historian or something, but you do look at some of the things that were happening in the early 1900s, mid 1900s, and it was really interesting stuff. I mean, it does seem like, you know, some of that was lost, and maybe that is some of what Kyle is feeling, like we've lost something here and we're not sure what, and you know, it's probably hard to pinpoint. It's probably a lot of things, really a lot of factors involved, and that is worth noting and learning from that and trying to the next generation to go the next step, you know, and continue moving on and building these things that should be built. And anyways, yeah, it's interesting things to think about.
So if I can just use my soapbox here or something,
please
draw a little further lesson from that. Missions and outreach can be a divisive topic. And the way it often plays out in Anabaptist circles is you have enthusiasm for mission and outreach and ways they want to do it. And often that gets tied up with other changes that people want to make that may or not be actually be connected to missions. Maybe they just want to make those changes anyhow, and then they use missions to justify making them or whatever. And then on the other hand, you have people, you know, with a lot of concerns about how they see missions being done, and it gets into attention. And sometimes, yeah, it feels like you have groups rejecting missions, you have other groups that seem to be just, you know, rejecting the culture and values in terms of missions, and it gets into a tug of war. And I think that was some of the loss there, dispute about how to do missions.
That's
but I just come
point.
Back
yeah.
to... you know, that observation. So often the people that split are the people that need each other the most. So stay engaged and work through things and commitment, find a way forward.
Do you have anything to add, Jern?
Amen.
Wow, very good. Yeah, there's a whole lot to that story that would be really fun to unpack. Maybe we should disappear for a month and do a bunch of research and talk to a bunch of people and come back and do an episode on it, because it's something I find really interesting.
If you can figure that out in a month, you're doing pretty good.
How about maybe 10 years from now? So it's good stuff to think about. Thanks, Kyle, for the comment. It's important things to consider and contemplate. It really is. And thank you all for listening, for supporting us on the Partners Program. We really appreciate it. It's great to have people that are engaged with what we do and care about what's happening here at Anabaptist Perspectives. And once again, got that link down there in the description if you've got a comment or a question you'd like us to tackle in a future episode. We would love to hear it. As always, you can find all our content on our website, anabaptistperspectives.org, and we'll catch you in the next episode.